The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello, and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing. Today is Tuesday, the 28th of March, 2006, and this is show number 49, a quick race wrap-up for the MotoGP season opener at Jerez this past weekend. I kind of apologize that I'm running a little late with this. It's been kind of a really busy week for me, and I think that it will continue to be very busy for the next month or so. So podcast might have to take a little bit of a backseat to real life, unfortunately. But at least we have genuine MotoGP racing and all that to kind of entertain us, and we don't have to rely on MotoGPOD only for our entertainment fix. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the Spanish Grand Prix at Jerez. What a weekend. It was a really big one. We're going to quickly touch on qualifying, and then we have some comments about the race itself, and we'll probably talk a little bit more about it again next Friday. So first of all, the MotoGP qualifying session last Saturday got off to a little bit of a rocky start when Alex Hoffman's Ducati blew up on his outlap and it gushed oil all over the track while Hoffman tried to ride it into the gravel trap. This was on the one of the first right-handers of the double right-hander. It's the Angel Nieto turn there at Jerez. And before the flags had gone out to slow the riders down and everything, five riders hit that oil and all went down. Rossi went down first, closely followed by Shinya Nakano, Randy Dupuynier, Tony Elias, and Kenny Roberts Jr. So it was an expensive day for Kawasaki, with both riders going down in the first few minutes of the qualifying session. Not a good way to start the day. Then the session was red flagged while the oil was cleaned up. When the riders went back out, there was the usual mishmash of fast laps by different riders and all that. But two facts were pretty clear. Loris Caparossi was doing very well, and the Camel Yamaha team had not pulled off any last-minute miracles of any kind to sort out their vibration problems, because they were not doing that well. And then, with about half an hour remaining in the session, the riders started putting on the Q tires to turn in a really fast lap, starting with Nakano, who set fastest lap with a 140.236, only to be blown completely out of the water by Caparossi about 2 minutes after that, with a lap that was a full second faster at 139.2. For the rest of the session, no other rider came all that especially close to Caparossi's record-breaking lap time, but Caparossi himself did go out, and then he did two even faster laps, finishing the session on pole with a smoking fast lap of 139.064. So, to cover the grid, we had on the front row Caparossi, Gibernau, and Nakano, an all Bridgestone front row with both factory Ducatis on the front row as well. So, you know, who says there's no tire war, and who says the Ducatis are not going to be very, very competitive this season, and the Kawasaki's. Row 2, Hayden, Pedrosa, and Elias making it all Honda on the second row. Row 3, Melandri, the last rider that had a time in the 139s, by the way. He was just about 9/10 off of Caparossi's pace. Then he is joined by Dupuynier and Valentino Rossi, who only qualified 9th on the grid. Not a very good qualifying session for Rossi there at all. Although he will be one of the first guys to tell you, he is not the strongest qualifier. Row 4, Edwards Vermeulen out-qualifying his teammate Hopkins, who finished up that row. Row 5 was Kenny Roberts Jr. on the Team KR Honda-powered KR211B. Then Carlos Checa, whose surprising dominance in the preseason testing seems to have sort of petered out a little bit here in the qualifying session. And then in the 15th spot there, Casey Stoner. Not too bad, considering that he missed the last several rounds of testing due to a shoulder injury, so he hasn't been on the bike for a little while and hasn't got a lot of that testing data that is so helpful, but, you know, managed to qualify there, get on row 5. Row 6, Tomata, Cardoso on the first of the Dantin Ducatis, and James Ellison, who was not last for change, nice. And then all by himself in row 7, Alex Hoffman. Probably didn't have a very good qualifying session after his engine blew up there earlier on in the session. So, that's our grid for the first round of the 2006 MotoGP season, the Spanish Grand Prix at Jerez. Alrighty, now we're going to be talking about the actual race. Obviously, I will be telling you the results, so if you have not watched it yet for whatever reason, and you do not want your viewing pleasure to be spoiled, I suggest that you turn the podcast off right now. But please do wait for the entire thing to download, and then make sure that you listen to it right after you've watched the race, and you can kind of comment on what we're talking about here. And for those of you who already know the results, or that you rely on MotoGPOD for, you know, all of your MotoGP news, here we go. Everybody's had a chance. If they're leaving, we'll talk to you later, guys. Alrighty. When the red lights went out, the whole front row got away quite well, and Rossi made an excellent start from his third row inside grid position. In fact, looking back at the race coverage and everything, I think that Rossi was in probably about fourth position going into the first turn. It was really looking like he was going to have an excellent race. And that's about the time that, as you are probably already aware, everything went terribly wrong for him. Going into turn one, Tony Elias came up the inside, maybe a little bit too hot on the brakes or something like that, and he tagged Rossi's back wheel. It pretty much just swept Rossi's bike out right from under him, and he was extremely lucky not to be run over by Elias and then by Hopkins and Edwards behind him. Teammate Edwards was right there, pretty much did his a stoppie avoiding Rossi, which forced Edwards briefly onto the grass outside of turn one there. Edwards stayed on the bike and he got back into the race, but Rossi was off the bike and he picked himself up and he had a very uncharacteristic temper tantrum there for a few seconds, and it pretty much almost looked like Rossi figured he was done and out of the race, and then noticed that the bike was still running or something along those lines, decided to get back on it. So he picked the bike up with the help of some corner workers and he wobbled out onto the track, obviously having some very severe problems of some kind or another with his right foot peg, which we will get to in a minute. Now, by the time he got back on the track, Rossi was almost 45 seconds down from Caparossi in the lead, but he was still in the race. The first lap is officially classified as Caparossi in first, Melandri second, and Gibernau third. But then, during the second lap, after some amount of time had passed, in fact, and we saw a replay of Rossi's crash, we noticed that Gibernau was more or less gone. He had disappeared. In fact, it was actually some time before the announcers on the official MotoGP feed with Nick Harris and a new guy, Marcus something or other. It's some time before they even noticed that he was missing. So, you know, it's kind of sad for the poor guy there. He's in second place on the race, and then all of a sudden he's gone, and nobody seems to care. But it turns out that a sensor went out in his gearbox, and that was the problem. So, bike no longer working, race over for Sette. Apparently his curse continues. First DNF of that race. So then, onto the race. After starting fifth on the grid, Pedrosa had fallen to seventh on that first lap, but he quickly started moving up the order into sixth on the second lap, and then he was in fourth place on the third lap, and into third on the fifth lap. Meanwhile, Hayden had been in third position behind Melandri and Caparossi once Sette retired for those first few laps, but Hayden got around Melandri on lap four, and then, as I said, Pedrosa passed Melandri to take third position, which was on lap five. While this was all going on, Caparossi started breaking away. He was extending the gap to about 2.25 seconds over second place Hayden and Caparossi there. Then on lap seven, Pedrosa got around Hayden to take second. For a time in the early part of the race there, it really looked like Pedrosa was going to, he was steadily gaining on Caparossi, and it looked like he was going to be able to catch him up, you know, probably around lap 14 or 15 or so, we thought that he might be catching up to Caparossi there, which Hayden also started dropping back around this time, riding a fairly lonely third with a several second gap in front of him and behind. But meanwhile, Edwards and Rossi, who had fallen to 18th and 19th, on the first turn, which meant, you know, dead last, were working their own way up the order, both by passing and by simple attrition. Randy Dupuynier had high-sided during the morning warm-up, which was always embarrassing, but he also had an injury on his right hand. He, however, decided to race despite that injured hand, but he couldn't brake very well. So on lap 7, Dupuynier ran off track because of this problem, and he decided it would not be safe to continue. So he retired there on lap 7, which moved Rossi and Edwards up a position. Edwards had passed Hoffman, Cardoso, and Ellison by that time and would eventually pass Checa and Vermeulen to finish the race in 11th. And Rossi was, like I said, still way back there and still working his way up, more or less maintaining his distance behind Caparossi, which was somewhere in the 45 to 50 second range, but that meant that he was closing in on Ellison, who was steadily dropping back from Capirossi, so he eventually passed Ellison for 15th place on lap 15. He went from laying in the gravel to earning a point in the championship in only 15 laps, not too bad. He would eventually pass Hoffman on lap 20 and finish the race in 14th. Meanwhile, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves here, but back at the front, which is what you see on TV, Pedrosa and Capirossi were doing their thing. And like I said before, it really looked like Pedrosa was going to be catching up to Capirossi. He had steadily gained on him. He was turning in some very impressive lap times, and that he'd, you know, be able to make a move sooner or later. But Capirossi just kind of stepped it up another notch and kept him at bay, more or less. So, in fact, actually, in the last five laps of the race, Capirossi went from being about 3 or 4 tenths ahead of Pedrosa to being 4.4 seconds ahead at the finish line. So he really poured on the coal there for the last few laps and opened up a pretty good gap. Which, of course, Capirossi hoiked a big giant wheelie as he crossed the finish line and won the race. Pedrosa, like I said, about 4.4 seconds behind, and then behind Pedrosa by another 5.6 seconds was Nicky Hayden. So on the podium, we had Capirossi, Pedrosa, and Hayden, followed in fourth by Tony Elias, who, by the way, stopped on the cool-down lap to apologize profusely to Rossi. But, you know, it is a racing incident. Things happen. It's unfortunate, but it's just the way life is. And Rossi was very gracious about it, told him not to worry, only to remember, you know, maybe to brake next time, and if it's too late to do that, then to hit another bike besides Rossi, which, you know, that was kind of a nice sentiment. Melandri came in fifth. Stoner was a very impressive sixth place, you know, coming up from 15th on the grid. Not a bad performance at all for his MotoGP debut. Nakano was in seventh, not quite what he had hoped for after qualifying on the first row, but not too shabby. He did come in fifth place at Jerez last year, but he couldn't quite repeat that kind of performance. Eighth place, Kenny Roberts Jr., not too bad at all. Then Hopkins in ninth, and in 10th spot, we had Tomata rounding out the top 10 there. In 11th, Colin Edwards, who should be very proud of that after the first lap incident messed him up so bad. And then in 12th, Chris Vermeulen. Carlos Checa came in a somewhat disappointing 13th. Which, you know, I have a bet going on that Checa is going to be on the podium sometime this season, so he's going to need to show us some more of that wonderful performance he had going on in the preseason testing and apply that to a race. 14th, Valentino Rossi. A very impressive display of skill and perseverance. He finished the race. He got two championship points on a bike with a broken foot peg. I've looked at the pictures of the race that we've found, and I've talked with some people, and our opinion is what it looks like. It looked like he wedged his toe into the bracket for his rear set, kind of having his leg at a funny angle. It's kind of hard to say, and I haven't seen anything yet in official in writing about it. You know, exactly where were you putting your foot there? So I'm kind of curious about it. You know, so, Uchio, if you're listening, drop me an email about where the hell Vale put his foot during the race. 15th spot for the last championship point, Alex Hoffman. And then in 16th and out of the points, James Ellison. Now, come on, James, push it. I know you can do it. You can do much better than this. You do not want to confirm our fears during testing. Second, the second Dantin Ducati rider, Jose Luis Cardoso, retired after 13 laps with tire problems. The official Dantin press release said that his retirement was, get this, caused by the improvised deterioration of the rear Dunlop. Yeah, improvised, which improvised deterioration sounds pretty much like it was translated by Google. So as I've said, he retired with some kind of tire problem or not. And then also, as I've said previously, Dipinay and Gibernau also DNF'd. So all in all, it was a very exciting race to start the season, if it was a little bit different than I expected. Rossi crashing on the first turn is about the last possibility that I would have considered for the race at all. But, you know, he did, like I say, get the bike back up. He got back out on the race, 2 points down, gives a whole bunch of riders the chance to say that they're ahead of Rossi in the championship points, which they can say that for at least another 2 weeks. And then after that, probably a lot of them aren't going to be saying that anymore. So that's going to be doing it for this race wrap-up. If you have not yet listened to episode 48 from this past Friday, only 3 or 4 days ago, I encourage you to do so. We had an interview with Chuck Axlin from Team Roberts that was very, very cool, well worth listening to. And don't forget, the deadline to enter the contest to win the full set of actual Komodo leathers, a full race suit, is Wednesday, the 29th of March, 2006, at 3 p.m. Pacific time. So if you haven't heard about that contest and you don't know about the details, it's all in episode 47. You can find it on the website, MotoGPOD.com. You're looking for episode 47. And that will tell you the details of how you can win a set of Komodo race leathers. So until next Friday, this is Bob Hayes saying thank you very much for listening. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorner Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorner Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.